I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. There are more than 2,500 miles of streets in Philadelphia, and it's home to one of the most dangerous roads in the country, Roosevelt Boulevard. It's also an old city, which means there are lots of narrow streets by today's standards, great for walking, but not for making a delivery and blocking traffic. While decades ago, the goal was to make Philadelphia a car-friendly place, today it's all about sharing the roads and sidewalks, figuring out how drivers and pedestrians, cyclists and transit riders can all get along. And everyone has a complaint about someone else. Motorists running red lights, cyclists riding on the sidewalks, pedestrians not paying attention. Well, Philadelphia has a new director of a new department. It's called Complete Streets, and her name is Kelly Yeaman. She's here to talk about how to make the streets safer and more efficient for everyone. And welcome to Radio Times. Congratulations on your new job.
Thank you for having me.
You're very welcome. Also with us is Greg Krukovich, and he's Associate Director for Transportation at the Delaware Valley Regional Planning Commission, where he manages transit, bicycle, and pedestrian planning. And Greg, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. This note, you don't have to live in Philadelphia or a city for that matter to deal with some similar transportation problems and have ideas for what to do about it. So we want you to join the conversation. Kelly, let me begin with you. This is this new department called Complete Streets. What's the overarching goal for this department and for you?
Well, I think we have two main goals. One is to continue the work that was done under the previous administration to really build out all of those networks you're referring to for people biking, for people walking, for freight, for cars. How do we bring that all together and then add transit into that mix as well? So that's part of my office. And then the next is the recently enacted executive order on Vision Zero and how do we move towards zero deaths on our roadways. And so that's going to be within the next definitely 6 months. The real focus and meat of my work is bringing together multidisciplinary task force to work on that issue across city agencies and with our community partners on how do we start tackling the problem of deaths and serious injuries on our roadways.
You're new to this job, a new department, but you're not new to Philadelphia. You lived here for a while. So this this place is not a complete strange environment for you.
No, I have a little history. I was here back about 8 years ago when I was working in consulting and wanted to live in a city. So I got to go to Philadelphia.
What do you see as the big challenge, though, the city in getting all these parts to figure out how to work together?
Well, I think the challenging thing about Philadelphia, and especially coming from both New York and Minneapolis, where I've worked previously, is we had a lot of room. So you didn't have to have the direct trade-offs that you have to have in Philadelphia. And I think that's mainly a lot of the issues in especially Center City, some of the older neighborhoods as we branch out into, say, the Northeast, where more recent development has happened. You have a little more room to deal with things. It's still not like it's plentiful,
no.
But there's a little more breathing room within the street to make trade-offs that can actually work for everyone rather than a direct one-for-one kind of exchange of space.
I do want to pick up on that. Greg, let me get you into the conversation. What do you see as the challenge here? Again, getting all these literally moving parts to work together.
Yeah, I think I would pick up on what Kelly said. I think Philadelphia has these amazing old bones, which are a tremendous asset. They make it a really fun place to walk most of the time. It's a really pleasant experience to be. People want to be in places like Society Hill, Walnut Street, South Philly. There's a lot going on. They're very active places, very active streets, and the kind of the smaller scale of our streets and our sidewalks contribute to that, but they also, Kelly practiced most recently in Minneapolis,
yeah.
and as she mentioned, it's a lot easier to install, to sort of give space to every mode when you have a lot more room to work with. In Philadelphia, if you're providing more space, for example, for bicyclists, it means you're taking some space from somebody else, and so it makes it a little bit more of an acute challenge to balance those
trade-offs. Well, it leads more to conflict, wouldn't you say, in that everyone's trying to sort of jockey for their piece of the road?
Yeah, it can contribute to conflict. Sometimes it can actually help a little bit if you have if it's sort of a calm space and everyone's sort of competing for space in a at a low speed way, then it can actually work well for in terms of safety outcomes. But particularly when you have faster moving traffic as part of that mix and heavy vehicles and things like that, it definitely can exacerbate some of those conflicts.
I've heard about traffic calming, and I wonder, help us understand, Kelly, what that means, how that works.
Well, I think traffic calming, you have to look at it within the context of any given street. But what it really means is getting cars to travel at the speed that is safe for that context. So if it's a neighborhood street, you're going to want people to be going more slowly as you have people living there, kids playing there. On our larger, more arterial roads, it means separating uses and providing safe space on the road for each use. So dedicated bike lanes, protected bike lanes, high-quality sidewalks and pedestrian crossings, clear lanes for travel and turn lanes. I think that's one of the key things to always remember is turn lanes for cars really improve safety for everyone. So when we can get those in, it provides that you're making a clear movement when you're in an intersection. And intersections are kind of those key conflict locations that where we see a lot of crashes happening.
Well, indeed. I mean, the idea of an intersection, when you talk about sort of clear, what does that mean for a car? You get an arrow or what?
It could mean signal timing, or it could just be paint on the street that you have a turn lane that you're moving into, a left turn lane, a right turn lane. In a lot of streets, we don't necessarily have those. Sometimes we don't have the space. But when we can get those in and we have the turn volumes that justify it, mm-hmm. It can really improve the safety of an intersection.
And how much of safety is about design, Greg? And you can't redesign. I mean, Philly is what it is in many ways. You can tinker.
Yeah, that's exactly right. We're not looking to move those building fronts on a lot of those older streets in Philadelphia. So I think a huge element of safety is design. It's really hard to take a street that is designed for moving a lot of automobile and motorized traffic as quickly as possible and make it work well for bicyclists and for pedestrians without providing that physical separation that Kelly was talking about. And then at intersections specifically, there's a lot of nuance there that impacts how traffic moves, and then how automobile traffic moves really impacts how safe the intersection feels for bicyclists and for pedestrians. So what's the turning radius? So how sharp does a car or a bus or a truck have to turn? And if they can make a gentle turn at pretty high speeds, then that can be an unfriendly environment and potentially an unsafe environment for bicyclists and pedestrians.
How about visibility? I mean, if you're paying attention to the road, can you see people coming across an intersection? How much do you think that's a common problem in that people just don't see what's going on?
Yeah, it's a really common problem, I would say, especially at night. We've got, unfortunately, pedestrian and bicycle collisions happen at all times of day, but on the some of the more severe ones tend to happen at night, and they're exacerbated by relatively poor lighting conditions at intersections. And it's especially problematic when you've got those turning radii that allow cars and other motorized traffic to take those turns relatively quickly. They just don't have the time to sort of slam on the brakes and avoid that collision in some cases.
And I think in the city context, a lot of times we, you know, use every inch of curb space we can for multiple different uses. But if those parked cars are right up to the intersection and somebody's peeking out behind a parked car, somebody else, you know, doesn't stop or doesn't see somebody, that is where you're going to have a lot of issues, is just that visibility issue, and clear sight lines at intersections can really improve safety.
I wonder, too, about the numbers of collisions that happen in Philadelphia, including deaths, fatalities. You mentioned Vision Zero. A little girl was killed over the last Friday in West Philadelphia, but apparently it was a hit-and-run driver who killed her as she was, I believe, getting home from school or walking home from school. Also, someone was killed on Roosevelt Boulevard, a pedestrian trying to cross those multiple lanes of Roosevelt Boulevard. I mean, this is the reality, and I guess something, Kelly, you got to figure out how to reduce this.
Yeah, so I think in the general sense, because I can't speak about those specific crashes, yeah, that's exactly why we're creating the Vision Zero Task Force, is to bring together the police department, the streets department, license inspections, all these different departments, and then representatives from community groups to talk about how are we going to align everything we're working on to bring down those crashes. And some of it's going to be design, some of it's going to be enforcement, some of it's going to be education, and then how are we tracking and evaluating it all. And then bringing in, I think, one thing that we're going to look at distinguishing ourselves is working on equity and how are we really working with all of our communities in the city.
Equity meaning making sure that all neighborhoods
are safe and all neighborhoods feel represented and that they have a voice within this process. And that's going to be something we're going to be building through this task force and then working with local neighborhoods, community groups, to really hopefully build a joint vision of traffic deaths are preventable.
And I wonder, Greg, how much of this is education? How much is it enforcement or combination of the two? My understanding, I mean, certainly hit and run driver, that's a crime. I mean, that's someone leaving the scene of an accident. Oftentimes pedestrians make mistakes. And certainly crossing Roosevelt Boulevard, you sometimes feel like you're going to take your life in your hands getting off, even though they're medians to hop from one to the other. It's still, it's basically a highway that you're crossing.
Yeah, it's kind of like a river of cars. Education and enforcement are a big part of it. And usually we'll see what the city of Philadelphia does in terms of its Vision Zero policy emphases. But usually with Vision Zero approaches, there's a combination of design changes and education and enforcement changes. The whole idea with Vision Zero is that we don't call them accidents anymore. We call them crashes because every crash is preventable. It's not an act of fate, which is sort of the implication of the term accident. And
meaning someone is at fault or someone did something wrong or made a mistake.
Someone made a mistake, and in some cases, the designer is the someone that made the mistake. We can do a much better job at designing roads and building roads that are safer for everybody, for that full balance of users that we're talking about. I mean, for me personally, I tend to put more emphasis on the design side than the education side. Because my sense is that a well designed street shouldn't require an instruction manual. It shouldn't require really extensive signage to explain how to be safe. It shouldn't require an extensive driver education training to understand how to be safe. This you should be able to read the street and adjust your behavior based on what the design of the street is telling you to be safer.
Almost, I'm going to break here. Is there a street that fits that definition in Philadelphia, or that you know of in the region?
That's well designed. There's lots of streets around the region that are well designed, and lots of streets in Philadelphia that are well designed. Lots of those older, the reason why Walnut Street is in West Center City is a pleasant place to be is because while there can be a lot of motorized traffic, it's not moving that quickly, which makes it a pretty comfortable place to be as a pedestrian. I think those, as we were talking about earlier, a lot of our older streets, both in the city of Philadelphia and in our suburban communities, we've inherited great bones, and it's a matter of leveraging that in a modern environment.
And you're nodding your head, Kelly. Hold on. We're going to take a very short break talking about streets, transportation, motorists, cyclists, pedestrians. How do we all get along? And that's Greg Krakiewicz from the Director for Transportation at the Delaware Valley Regional Planning Commission, and Kelly Yeeman. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moskowing talking about the best ways to cooperate with our fellow travelers, whether we are walking or driving or cycling. And again, our guests are Kelly Yeeman. She's Philadelphia's new and first director of Complete Streets. And she's been talking about her job, her mission to try to get all these moving parts to work together. And also with us, Greg Krakiewicz from the Delaware Valley Regional Planning Commission. 1-888-477-9499, the number to join our conversation. Already a bunch of comments here. Radio Times at WHYY.org. And you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Kelly, I know you were nodding your head as Greg was talking before, but I do have a question about Center City, Philadelphia in particular, the kind of congestion. I think everyone's got an anecdote of sitting in a car for what seems like, half an hour or more trying to get through some of these streets. Is the goal to use carrots or sticks is to get people out of their cars, to reduce the number of cars in Center City, Philadelphia?
I think it's both. We already have the stick, which is congestion. and paying for parking and the general hassles of doing that, I think we've got to figure out how to create the carrots. That's where we talk about building out the bike network, improving transit. When we look at cities across the world, that's what they're doing. You know, you have to have both. And as development continues and the city continues to grow, I have ultimate faith that congestion will get worse, because that's just the fate of a growing city. As more people are here, congestion will get worse. So how do we make it easier for people to get around not using their car, leaving their car at home, not bringing a car in the first place? And I think that's what Greg and I are both working on the regional level and at the city level, of how do we create those networks that you feel safe and comfortable walking, biking, taking transit to get to
and
center
driving.
City. And driving. But I think our goal as the city grows is not necessarily always to make it easy for everyone. Otherwise, that's what was tried for the last 40 years, 50 years in our cities, and it's not working. And so we've got to try something new.
Well, I'm thinking about things like car share, where people don't necessarily own a car but have access to a car. But it seems to me, Greg, the goal is not to make it so onerous that people say, well, I'm going to go to the King of Prussia Mall instead of coming into Center City, Philadelphia, which is to make it a place where people want to be but where they're not sitting in traffic.
Yeah, I guess one thing I would say is that congestion is a good thing. It doesn't sound good to say that, but congestion means that there's economic activity, that people want to be in Philadelphia. And if they're at a standstill circumstance in their cars, it means that we're not doing as good a job as we should be in terms of allowing them to get around efficiently across all the different modes that Kelly was talking about. So we have, in addition to all that, those great bones we've inherited on the street side, we've also inherited a really fantastic fixed route transit infrastructure, SEPTA's regional rail system, SEPTA's Market Frankfurt Elevated, Broad Street Line, et cetera. So the buses get stuck in the same traffic as drivers do. So
yes, it does.
We have challenges there in terms of surface transit, but in terms of the non-surface transit, we can definitely do better to allow more folks to find more of those options acceptable and desirable for their trips.
Well, and shows about this, but as we know, the regional rail part of SEPTA having to deal with about a third of their cars were taken out of commission because they did not meet safety standards, slowly getting back online. But at the same time, I think that's created a lot of problems for SEPTA, for riders as well. I'm one of those riders, and I see emptier cars. What can I say? You know, you don't see the kind of ridership that we did 6 months ago.
Yeah, SEPTA's ridership is on regional rail has declined a little bit. Ultimately, the long-term trend is that it's been, over recent decades, going up and up and up. And I think long-term that trajectory is there. But, that's the good thing about that is that they have a safety-first culture, as we all try to have. So it was really important to correct that problem when they discovered it. And, they'll get back to where they were.
Let me read some comments here. One from Chantel says, Roosevelt Boulevard should be your top priority, Kelly. It's a mess. And we talked about that. And do you see it that way? I mean, this is a complicated road that goes through neighborhoods and past malls, and it's busy as all get out.
It is. And we have an amazing project manager, Angie Dixon, who is her mission.
Really?
Is to work on the Route for Change. It was a Tiger Grant that the city was awarded from the federal government to do exactly that, to examine and study Roosevelt Boulevard and come up with concrete recommendations on what we can do to fix it. So that planning process is happening now. You can go online, and it's Route for Change, and get involved.
Let me read some more comments. One from David, there's no such thing as a bad cyclist, bad driver, bad commuter, bad pedestrian. I would agree with that. He says, stop labeling people. Many of us are indeed able to do all these things related to transportation and are really good people. An email from John, is the Kenny administration willing to spend political capital on making street changes even when there's local opposition? Now, I mean, that's a sort of a broad question, but some of these decisions are complicated.
They are complicated. And, I've never worked in any of my cities on something that got 100% consensus and everybody always agreed on everything. But I think the key on any of these projects is that we're sitting down, having the conversation with the community and coming up with the best decisions we can for the moment. And sometimes it's an iterative process. That's the great thing about streets is that a lot of the times we're talking about paint. or signs. These are things that
– or lights, perhaps.
You know, lights, tweaking signal timing. These are things that we can put them out there. We can, you know, for ways, see how they're working. If we need to tweak something, if it's not working, we can be responsive on that level of, okay, we'll go back out. It's not we're not talking about, for the most part, radically reconstructing streets. It's changing smaller things that if they're not working –
yeah,
we've got flexibility.
Now you're nodding your head, Greg. Anything you want to add?
Yeah, that's something that the city under Otis, which is the department that Kelly works in, and also the former mayor's Office of Transportation and Utilities, they established under the Nutter administration a really great, I think, experimental culture. And so the Spruce Pine buffered bike lanes that are one of the main east-west ways to get across Center City by bike came out of that. It was a pilot. You know, they wanted to try it out, demonstrate that the world didn't end based on this experiment, and then it became permanent. And safety outcomes improved, bicycle usage improved, reliability of the corridors improved. And I think for Philadelphia can be a temperamentally conservative place. So kind of an experimental culture, a pilot-oriented culture is a great way to do business in that kind of climate. And they've also demonstrated in some other corridors that where the facility didn't have the same outcomes or where the community wasn't convinced following the pilot, they've rolled it back. And I think that's a great way of building trust.
Let me see what Beth from Philadelphia has to say. In fact, I know what she's going to say. Beth, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. Thanks.
Hi there. You're welcome.
I live in West Philly. I love cyclists, seeing this sort of vigor and youthfulness and the determination not to use cars if you don't need one. But as an older person who walks the streets of West Philly and often Center City, and also who sometimes does drive, I am concerned about what sort of feels to me kind of like, oh, I don't know, the tyranny of cyclists sometimes. People who think that they're sort of on this crusade or campaign to show the rest of us how righteous they are on their bikes, and at the same time ignore safety issues, no lights, no protective, you know, reflective gear, blowing stop signs, passing on the right, weaving in and out, and riding on the sidewalks. So I'm curious to know what your guests think about how we can really be more respectful of each other, and that goes both ways. And I'll just listen off the air to their comments.
I think you asked a question that a lot of people want to know the answer to. Kelly, I'm going to start with you.
Well, I have to say I've heard this everywhere, but I think as you grow actually a cycling network and truly quality cycling facilities, protected bike lanes, trails, bike lanes, that really give cyclists a place to be and encourages new people, especially, we can say women are somewhat an indicator species of cycling.
Is that
if you
right?
get them out there, they're just more likely to be running the errands for the family, to be toting the kids. It's just the way it is.
Are they more likely to stop at a stop
sign? And they are more likely to be safety conscious. They are not going to be the road warriors. And if we're designing a system for kids and for moms and for older adults, this is a system that will welcome better behavior rather than, you know, I mean, I think we've all been risk-taking youth, and if we can temper that with a wider swath of users, that helps. And I mean, there's always things we can do on working with targeted communities on education and getting lights into people's hands to put on their bikes. Right. But I think really growing the cycling population, I've seen that in Minnesota where everybody bikes, young, old, and they're really building out that system for everyone. It does start to change the culture of who's on the road and how they're behaving and gets them off the sidewalk. First person stops at a red light, second person stops at a red light, everybody stops. So it's kind of building that. And it's growing pains.
It's growing pains. Greg, in terms of then bicycle laws, do cyclists basically have to follow the rules of cars?
Yeah, in Pennsylvania and in Philadelphia and in most places, cyclists have to
Our vehicles,
the street, you follow the rules of the road, general responsibilities to yield and all that sort of stuff. And I think Kelly's exactly right with everything that she was saying. There's a certain portion of the population, let's say it's about 10% of people who are cycling now and are pretty comfortable cycling with painted facilities and in mixed traffic sometimes. And there's about a third of the population, the overall population, that isn't going to bike no matter what we do. Maybe they have a physical impairment or they just prefer not to. But there's sort of a quiet majority of people that are willing to try cycling, the mainstream public, if we made it safer or if we provided other amenities for them. And I think Kelly's exactly right, that as more of those people start to cycle and other people like them see people like themselves biking, it sort of changes who's riding. And I think it establishes new behavioral norms. So I think if you think about when you're driving, or at least I'll think about when I'm driving, I don't stop at a stop sign or at a red light just because I'm afraid I might get a ticket. I stop at a stop sign or a red light because I'm so conditioned to do so. I would feel really weird not doing so. I know maybe not everybody has that.
I know. My pet peeve, but yes, yeah. No, go ahead, Greg.
Yeah, so I think as new norms get established for bicyclists, when I stop at a red light and I see three bicyclists keep going and I feel like the weirdo, if there's two other people that stop with me and then that next person feels kind of strange for running through the street, that it really does change. And there's a virtuous cycle then where there's more people will start riding and it becomes safer and attracting still more people.
Is there a goal, Kelly, you think, for Philly to reach that sort of level of decorum? If you have X number of cyclists, then chances are there's going to be more.
I don't know if there's like a Mocher number there's been any vigorous research about if you hit 10% mode share for cycling that people start behaving. But I think, like I said, getting greater parity on the number of women out there and then just growing those numbers in general, I think Philadelphia could be one of the best cycling cities just from its land use alone and how close destinations are and the relative flatness, especially for a lot of the city. These are kind of the base conditions that could make it really great, but we're going to have a lot of work and give and take on the facility side of how do we build out that network. And it's a challenge, like we were talking about before, on the trade-offs. But as we do that, I think we'll grow that good behavior.
What is the most bike-friendly city in the country? Is it San Francisco or Portland or other people claim it?
I mean, I'm coming from Minneapolis? So I'm going to say Minneapolis, but it is a little back and forth between Portland and Minneapolis.
Oh, really?
As far as bicycling, as far as slightly larger cities. I mean, if you can look at the Davis, Californias, and some of the smaller cities that are just off the charts.
When it comes to
On the other hand, it depends how you frame it, because Philadelphia has the highest bike-to-work mode share of any of the top 10 large cities in the country. So we're doing something right, despite not having a bunch of protected lanes yet.
And I don't want to do a show entirely about bicycles. Let me get Joe from Philadelphia to join us. Hi, Joe. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning.
Number one, I do have to admit, I'm one of those horrible cyclists that doesn't stop at stop signs and red lights. It's just something that you get into the habit of doing. And, I apologize about it. I apologize on behalf of all cyclists, number one.
Well, Joe, let me stop you there. It's great to apologize, but how about you start stopping at red lights and stop signs?
It's something that once I get on a bike, I have a tendency not to think about it because, like you think, hey, I have to get here by a certain time. I'm not one of the cyclists that tries to show off. I'm not trying to show off my cycling prowess or anything. I'm
You know what? I mean, you're breaking the law, right? Do I have that right, Kelly?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm putting you on the spot here, Joe, but go ahead.
I also think it shows kind of how we haven't designed our system to recognize the realities of cycling. And it's not to say that cyclists should ever run red lights or stop signs, but that especially on some of our local roads, a lot of cities are for key cycling or cycle routes, they're flipping stop signs, they're changing the way they're designing intersections, creating speed tables or speed bumps. So we know that cyclists aren't necessarily going to stop because you've got a momentum issue. So let's figure out how to encourage the right behavior rather than always saying, well, you're not, especially at stop signs. How do we change even how that intersection's working and designed? So Joe here can get where she's going, but we're getting good behavior from everyone.
Joe, I'm sorry, and I jumped on your question there, but go ahead and ask it.
Oh, the other thing that I was going to say is I can't remember exactly where I heard it on WHY. It was either on BBC or NPR, but they had mentioned in one of the countries in Europe, they teach drivers to open the door with the hand opposite of the door. So most cars in Europe, the driver's on the right side, so they open with the left hand. So here mm-hmm. in the States, to open the door with your right hand, and that forces you to look back to keep from swinging your door wide open and hitting cyclists. Over 15 years ago, I got hit in the face with a car door by a cop on the 1500 block of Sansom Street, and it split my cheek wide open. And the thing is, I couldn't swing around the door because I was riding next to a tractor trailer.
Yeah. You know, so, Joe, I'm really sorry to hear that happened to you. We're almost up in a break, and I want to give Greg a chance to respond. I mean, this is obviously horrible when someone gets hurt like that, but talk about design, opening a door differently, right?
Well, I think it also speaks to, you know, we've talked about cyclists can definitely, many cyclists can do a better job of following the rules of the road, and we can design our facilities, as Kelly indicated, a little bit better to reward better behavior. But I think it's also, what we're hearing from Joe is that it's also true that it's the road's a tough place to be if you're a cyclist, and you have to have your head on a swivel and look in all directions because you're not surrounded by a several ton steel cage like everybody else on the road around you. So it's also true that the stakes are higher for cyclists, and that's why I think not just preserving momentum, but cyclists, they want to get ahead of that traffic behind them because any kind of space they can carve out for themselves, it makes it feel safer, makes it be safer for them.
Joe, I appreciate the call to Radio Times, and hopefully you recovered from your injury. We're going to take a very short break and then get back to our conversation. Talking with Greg Krakiewicz, and he's Associate Director for Transportation at the Delaware Valley Regional Planning Commission. And also with us is Kelly Yeaman, and she's the new director of the new Complete Streets Department here in Philadelphia, dealing with making streets safer for everyone, more efficient for everyone as well. We'll be right back. Today in Radio Times, talking about sharing the roads and sidewalks, figuring out how drivers and pedestrians and cyclists and transit riders can all get along. And you can join our conversation by calling us at 1-888-477-9499. You can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Let me get Jerry from Philadelphia to join our conversation. And Jerry, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you today?
Good, how are you?
Pretty good. I'm looking forward to Thanksgiving.
Me too.
And, I can smell the turkey.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead, Jerry.
Well, what I want to say is there's a couple of issues that Philadelphia could do that could ensure pedestrian and driver safety. There's quite a lot of jaywalking that goes on around in Philadelphia in the sections of, say, Port Richmond, Kensington, Frankfort, up and down Lehigh Avenue, Allegheny, Kensington Avenue. Cars have to stop on a dime sometimes because people will just run out in the middle of the street. They don't use the crosswalks. It's like they want to cross any place they want whenever they want, and it causes traffic jams because people are in the middle of the streets jaywalking, and it disheartens me a lot because I see people carrying babies, and they're jaywalking, and there's cars flying up and down the street, and you got sometimes you'll see people making U-turns in the middle of four-lane streets and two-lane streets and blocking the street off. I think Philadelphia needs to clean that up like they do in Jersey. They hand out fines and citations for things like that. And that would also increase the revenue for Philadelphia, too.
Well, Jerry, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. You describe a couple of neighborhoods. I think you could probably extend that to the entire city, maybe even the rest of the country as well. I'm curious, Kelly, what you think.
Yeah, I mean, I think kind of poor behavior on everyone's part on the streets can, you know, this is somewhat where the design happens, somewhat, you know, where do we have building entrances, where are we kind of pointing people to, but at the same time, you know, the U-turns in the middle of the street and unsafe situations, that is where the education enforcement elements come in, and building those relationships with our police department and with the DMV and how we're kind of running those programs both at the city level, and then there's a whole regional state education level of when you're getting your license, what are we doing there? How are we working with kids in school, and how are they? How is that education being integrated into kind of the curriculum of our education? So you're growing up with, here's how the system works. And I think when we look at systems that do work well, international examples of Sweden and the Netherlands, it's multi-pronged and coming from the educational institutions, from the local and state governments, and from the police.
Greg, is there a design solution to jaywalking?
Yeah.
Can you make people get to that intersection and wait for the light?
Well, I would say it depends on the details. As Kelly mentioned, and I think as Jerry intimated, we could all behave better. You know, drivers could behave better, pedestrians and bicyclists too. But sometimes jaywalking happens because of a design problem. As Kelly mentioned, sometimes we have trails or paths that kind of dead end in the middle of a block, and there's sort of the implication that you're allowed to cross there. And in some cases, you actually are legally allowed to cross there, even if there's not a marked crosswalk. But we also have some circumstances where the legal crossings are really, really far apart. And that's a very common problem on Roosevelt Boulevard, where if the surrounding neighborhoods, you have a street every 500 or 1,000 feet, but the legal crossings for this big roadway in the middle of it are much wider than that, then somebody has the option of either walking, you know, maybe 10 or 20 minutes out of their way to cross legally, or to cross mid-block and take their life into their hands. And it's tough math, but time's valuable for everybody. And that's a hard circumstance to mitigate in those cases.
Yeah, and just Kelly, to piggyback off of, especially I think some of the things we've seen on Roosevelt Boulevard has been sometimes the intersections are so daunting. And the
even
turning,
for drivers, I think they're
daunting. But as a pedestrian, you're watching that intersection and the turning vehicles and the left-turning vehicles, and you look at it and you say, you know, I could cross mid-block, and at least I only have to look at one direction of traffic, and I can hopefully judge that. And unfortunately, the traffic's going so fast, and you can't judge it. But people make that calculus, you know, of do I deal with the turning vehicles, or do I try and leapfrog it, and at least I'm dealing with one direction at a time. And so I think that gets back to some of those design solutions are – it's not all of them, and I think that's where the comprehensive look has to come in. But we have a lot of areas where natural desire lines, we need to figure out the design solution, and maybe it is that mid-block crossing that we have to embrace that is the right place. And then we have to come up with how to do that safely.
It's interesting. I'm talking to two people who have been hit by cars. I mean, and I don't know whether Philadelphia is worse when it comes to those statistics compared to other cities. Greg, do you know?
When it comes to jaywalking?
Pedestrians being hit by cars.
Well, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, New Jersey are pedestrian, federal highway, pedestrian-focused states. City of Philadelphia is a pedestrian-focused city because of higher instances of pedestrian crashes, pedestrian fatalities. That may not be a higher rate necessarily. It's just because we have a lot of walking and biking happening here. But yeah, I do. My eye twitches a little bit when somebody brings up jaywalking because that did happen to me.
I was
one of those cases where a campus pathway terminated mid-block and I crossed and got hit.
Wow. And have a rod in your leg, you told me before.
I do. It doesn't set off the stuff at the airports, though.
I'm glad to hear that. A tweet from Michaela. Any plans for more car-free days in Center City? A very pleasant experience. Is that under your department, Kelly?
Yeah, we've been talking about next year's Free Streets. I was sad to have missed the first one. Didn't move here in time, but we're in the planning phases. So, yes, keep an eye out for them. They will be coming back.
Some more comments. I'm having a little trouble as a driver navigating the Uber drivers who act like taxis, stopping short, pulling over where they don't belong. An email from a New Jersey listener. I hate driving in Center City, but I see the bicyclists as a problem. They're extremely fast, no warning until they almost hit you. An email from Anonymous from Philadelphia. Please address the constant rows of double parked cars by the Italian Market. That's in South Philadelphia. The entire road becomes blocked and there is no enforcement. Kelly, I'm back in your court here, and Greg, you might want to weigh in on that as well. Problem?
Double parking. It's always a problem and a challenge. when I was leaving New York City DOT, they gave me a sign that they used to put out in the streets there that said, thank you for parking legally. And I just found it so humorous. So I think it's really, how are we managing our curbside uses? What are we doing with our loading zones? Anytime you're seeing that, it's obviously pointing to kind of where we can make improvements on the duration that people are parked, the loading areas that we're providing it within those areas. And that's definitely something that is constantly being talked about whenever you're working on any given area.
Greg, you want to weigh in on that at all?
I would agree with Kelly that loading zones, formalizing loading spaces are a big part of it, but also it sort of echoes back to what we were talking about earlier. Cities are messy places. Philadelphia is a messy place. Skinny streets, you know, lots of competing uses. Some of that sort of friction, that natural friction, is always going to bear itself out.
Do you think, how big a problem do you think distraction is, whether it's distracted drivers, distracted cyclists, distracted pedestrians? I mean, certainly anecdotally, people will say, you know, it looks like everyone's on their cell phone or they're texting as they're doing all of those things. How big a problem do you think that is, Greg?
I think it's likely an increasing problem. I would surmise that it's probably more likely to be a problem for pedestrians and drivers, given how many other things bicyclists are having to look at while they're riding. But that's definitely something there's been a lot of, or at least some press in the industry circles over the last year, because for the first time in a while nationally, we saw a significant uptick in crashes and fatalities, traffic fatalities nationally. And there's some suggestion that it might be due to an increase in distracted driving, distracted walking, distracted everything. I think the data's not quite there on that, but it's definitely an emerging area of focus for everybody.
Well, as I say, anecdotally, there it is. Yeah, Kelly,
yeah, and
ahead.
I think it's just important for everybody to remember. I mean, even if you're hands-free or feeling like your brain is still engaged with that phone, and the safest thing you can do is put it in the back seat, put it in the trunk. I mean, the temptation is just too large, but the stakes are too high to have it near you. Even looking down at maps and stuff, taking your eyes, taking your mind off the road, and it's really about your mind off the road. So having that hands-free conversation, you're not fully in the car, you're not fully paying attention, and it's a problem across all modes, but I think we all need to remember it's not that important. Whatever you're doing is just not that important. You know, do you want to be responsible for taking someone's life or your own life?
Let me see what Josh from Doylestown has to say. Hi, Josh. Go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Thanks so much. Well, after that last comment, I think you're going to hate my question.
All right, go ahead.
I love the app Waze, and I use it all the time when I'm commuting because it takes real-time actual commuter speed and location information, and it uses it to route you around traffic or to tell you what's coming up ahead. And I'm wondering if there's any thought to developing something like that for Philadelphia, where you can actually get people to have this on their phones and use it to route around traffic, recommend routes for bicyclists, cars, and even people walking, and use it to gather a tremendous amount of real-time actual data about what's going on in the city, for people to report accidents, to report, you know, potholes, whatever it is, but to actually crowdsource this so that we can get a better sense of what's going on and get suggestions for how to travel.
Well, Josh, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. We'll find out if our guests hate your suggestion or not. Kelly, let me start with you.
I mean, I use Google Maps, and I definitely always check my routes because you want to find out your best one before you leave. But setting that up before you get in the car. And then I think, you know, the big question is, don't report these things while you're driving. You know, make a mental note. Come back to it later. But the scariest thought for me is that somebody's reporting that they saw a pothole or there's an accident on route whatever while they're driving, which could potentially cause another crash. So I think the biggest thing is just being safe on the road while you're on the road. And, you know, you can listen to the turn by turn, but don't touch it. Don't look at it. Trust in the wisdom of Google Maps or Waze, and don't play with it.
Greg?
Yeah, I agree with everything that Kelly's saying. I would say for the caller that we do have I personally kind of like the idea of using shared universal platforms, standard platforms, rather than coming up with something custom for Philadelphia. So there, you know, people are using Waze and Google Maps in Philadelphia for their routing decisions across all modes, and that's working pretty well. And actually, in terms of generating data from it, there's, I think PennDOT actually has a relationship now with Waze where they're drawing from. There's some two-way communication about that data that's actually informing some of the information that PennDOT puts out as well. But it's really interesting. One of the interesting phenomena about Waze and, to a lesser extent, Google is you're starting to get some pushback from certain neighborhoods because sometimes the software is so efficient at routing people a better way that it's routing people onto local residential streets that didn't used to have that level of traffic. And the network benefits in terms of carrying trips through the network are better, but it's sort of changing the dynamic in some individual local places because so many people are using it.
Greg, let me go back to you. We've been focusing largely on Philadelphia and also cities as well, thinking about the suburbs where sometimes there are not sidewalks or there are not bike lanes. People are you know, or bicycles might be just sort of hovering on the edge of a crowded country, or not crowded, but a narrow country road. How is the region dealing with those challenges?
We're trying to get better at it. I think that it's fair to say not just in our region, but in all regions across the country, there's lots of streets, lots of places that aren't comfortable, aren't safe to walk or bike on. And in terms of the mode share mix and how people are getting around, one of the things that we've observed locally and nationally over the last decade or so is that there's a real uptick in rates of bicycling specifically, a little bit for pedestrian, for walking, but more so for biking. But it tends to be very concentrated in the most urban places in the city of Philadelphia and specifically the most urban parts of Philadelphia and also in some of the older, walkable, more compact towns around the region. So we still have large parts of the region where that rate isn't growing very dramatically, but we still have people walking and biking, and they've always been there. Yeah. And in many cases, getting back to the equity angle that Kelly mentioned earlier, if there's stuff there, if there's development there and people don't have another option, they're going to walk, they're going to bike. And sometimes they're happening so few, we don't even have data on them except in the crash statistics or in the headlines. So we definitely, as a region, as an industry, we need to do a better job of more routinely making it at least a bare minimum level of safety for biking and walking in every facility type.
And we're almost out of time, about 20 seconds. Anything you want to add,
Kelly? I think even as it relates to the city, and when I was in Minnesota, I worked on the county level, so a lot of suburban development is how do you relate biking and walking to transit and getting people to those transit stations that can get them to jobs, to the city, to have that multimodal aspects even in the suburbs.
Well, to be continued, my thanks to both of you. Happy Thanksgiving as well. Kelly Yeaman, thanks for joining us today on Radio Times. And Greg Krivevich. I did so well.
You did so well.
Krivevich.
Close enough.
Thank you for joining us.
And this Happy Thanksgiving.
Same to you. James Taylor.
Damn this traffic jam. How I hate to be late. It hurts my motor to go so slow. Damn, this traffic jam. Time I get home, my supper will be cold. Damn, this traffic jam. Well, I left my job about 5 o'clock. It took 15 minutes to go 3 blocks. Just in time to stand in line with the freeway looking like a parking lot. Damn, this traffic jam. How I hate to be late. It hurts my motor to go so slow. Damn, this traffic jam. Get home, my supper will be cold. Damn, this traffic jam. Now I almost had a heart attack. Looking in my rearview mirror, I saw myself the next car back. Looking in the rearview mirror, about to have a heart attack. I said, damn, this traffic jam. How I hate to be late. It hurts my motor to go so slow. Time I get home, my supper will be cold. Damn, this traffic jam. Now when I die, I don't want no coffin. I thought about it all too often. Just strap me in behind the wheel and carry me with my automobile. Damn, this traffic jam. How I hate to be late. It hurts my motor to go so slow. Damn, this traffic jam. Time I get home, my supper will be cold.